In the realm of fantasy romance, few recent works have captured readers' attention like Rachel Schneider's Metal Slinger. This enemies to lovers tale has become a book talk sensation, amassing over 50 million views under its hashtag and earning praise from celebrities like Taylor Swift, who called it a spellbinding journey I couldn't put down. What makes this story so compelling isn't just its magical world-building or sizzling romance, but how it explores themes of identity, manipulation, and the complex nature of loyalty. Schneider's debut novel introduces us to a protagonist whose entire life has been built on lies, and whose journey to discover her true self will change the fate of nations. As we dive into this tale of forbidden magic and devastating betrayal, prepare to be transported to a world where even the most intimate connections may not be what they seem. A century ago, in a world divided by ancient grievances, the people of Alaha were banished to the sea by the Kenta Empire, forced to adapt to life on vast networks of ships and floating cities. Their only connection to land comes once a year during the market, a tightly controlled gathering where the two peoples engage in essential trade. For Bryn, a 17-year-old guard in training who grew up in the lowest levels of the floating city with no family name or status to claim, this annual visit represents both a terrifying risk and an intoxicating taste of freedom. The salt-worn vessels and endless horizon of her daily life stand in stark contrast to the solid ground she yearns to feel beneath her feet. Alongside her closest companions, Kai, the charismatic heir to Alaha's leadership who treats everyone as equals despite his status, Messer, whose quick wit and flirtatious nature mask a sharp tactical mind, and Aurora, the brilliant weapons specialist whose quiet demeanor belies her fierce loyalty, Bryn ventures into the market's bustling crowds. The Kenta people move through the marketplace like exotic birds, adorned in richly dyed silks and elaborate hairstyles woven with precious stones. Their confidence and casual relationship with the land fills Bryn with a complex mixture of envy and resentment, so different from the stories of cruel oppressors she grew up hearing in the creaking halls of her floating home. The carefully orchestrated market day shatters when Kai pulls Bryn aside between merchant stalls, his usual easy smile replaced by nervous energy. He confesses that he's petitioned his parents for permission to choose her as his match at the upcoming ceremony, a decision that would elevate a nameless urchin to the highest ranks of Alahan society. The weight of tradition, responsibility, and her own conflicted feelings about Kai sends Bryn running through the crowd, her guard training forgotten in the moment of panic. Her flight leads her directly into the grip of a Kenta soldier, whose dark eyes flash with cruel intent behind his distinctive gold nose ring. He roughly accuses her of theft, producing a mysterious green stone that he forces into her palm. Before she can protest, he presses her hand against a section of wall marked with ancient symbols. Pain like liquid fire courses through her body, drawing forth abilities she never knew existed, abilities that shouldn't be possible for an Alahan. The confrontation explodes into violence. Messer creates chaos by releasing cages of exotic birds into the crowd, while Aurora, always prepared, triggers small explosive charges that send sections of the marketplace crumbling into the sea. Bryn manages to escape her captor's grip by seizing his own knife and slicing through his heel tendon, but the damage is done. As they race back to their ships through the chaos, the reality of what has transpired weighs heavily on them all. A century of uneasy peace between Alaha and Kenta lies shattered like the marketplace stones now sinking beneath the waves. Bryn knows, with crushing certainty, that the Kenta will demand retribution, and her people, trapped on the sea, have nowhere left to hide. Back aboard their ship, Bryn finds herself isolated and ostracized by the crew, who blame her not only for their abbreviated market visit, but for potentially destabilizing the delicate peace with the Kenta. The whispers and cold shoulders follow her through the narrow corridors, a stark reminder of how quickly allegiances can shift. During an intense meeting in her quarters, Captain Wren reveals the full gravity of the situation. The Kenta leadership has agreed to maintain the peace treaty, but their terms are non-negotiable. They demand the surrender of both individuals responsible for the market attack, Bryn and Aurora. The diplomatic solution proves even more complex. While Aurora's safety is guaranteed through her betrothal to Kai, a political arrangement years in the making, Brynn faces an impossible ultimatum: agree to marry Kai herself, effectively taking Aurora's place, or be surrendered to Kenta Justice as a rebel insurgent. The choice weighs heavily on her, complicated by her growing feelings for Kai and her loyalty to Aurora. The situation takes an unexpected turn when the mysterious dark-eyed Kenta soldier from the market incident, now identified as Acker, arrives at Alaha in chains. His capture should be a victory, yet his demeanor suggests anything but defeat. He refuses to speak to anyone except Brynn, creating tension among the guards and leadership. During their first meeting, Acker readily reveals the location of the entire Kenta Armada, information that should have required torture to extract. His easy cooperation and enigmatic smile leave Brynn unsettled, especially when he whispers a farewell that sounds more like a promise. "This is only the beginning, little storm." Throughout his captivity, Acker systematically plants seeds of doubt in Brynn's mind. During their encounters, he questions everything she believes: her feelings for Kai, her allegiance to Alaha, and most disturbingly, the truth about her parents' fate. His words carry a weight that resonates with long-buried questions in her own heart. Acker suggests that her Alahan identity is a carefully constructed lie, hinting at dangers lurking beneath the surface of her accepted reality. When a violent storm strikes the coast, the prison cells begin to flood. Brynn discovers Acker's cell taking on water rapidly, forcing her to make a split-second decision between duty and compassion. Choosing to save him proves transformative. Acker teaches her to connect with magic she never knew she possessed, guiding her through the process of summoning the very dagger she had cast into the ocean days before. The metal sings to her blood in a way that feels both foreign and achingly familiar. Their escape together becomes a point of no return, particularly when Acker speaks a name that strikes her like lightning: Jovi. The name awakens something deep within her memory, a fragment of identity she can't quite grasp. This moment marks the beginning of Brynn's true journey, one that will force her to question everything she's believed about herself and her place in the world. As they flee into the night, she realizes that finding her true identity might cost her everything she's ever known, but the pull of truth proves stronger than the comfort of familiar lies. As Brynn, now beginning to accept her true name, Jovi, and Acker escape Alaha by boat, she learns the truth about her past. She disappeared during a family visit to Kenta when they were children. Her mother is still alive and never gave up searching for her, though her father's whereabouts remain unknown. The knife Brynn carries is actually her own creation, a magicked blade that calls to its maker, which is how Acker recognized her at the market. He had carried her knife for years while searching for her across every land, eventually wearing it only as a memorial when he lost hope of finding her alive. Their journey across the sea is perilous. With dwindling supplies and Acker suffering from a wound inflicted by Kai during their escape, they face starvation, dehydration, and the constant threat of pursuit from Alaha's ships. During this time, Jovi experiences her magical awakening, a painful transformation that enhances her abilities but leaves her temporarily vulnerable. Throughout their journey, the relationship between Jovi and Acker evolves from cautious alliance to something deeper. Despite her lingering feelings for Kai, Jovi finds herself drawn to Acker's protective nature and unwavering determination. Their connection is complicated by the revelation that they share a matching bond, a rare magical connection between elemental wielders that creates a powerful tether between their minds and bodies. When they finally reach land, they discover they've overshot their destination, arriving in hostile Roysen territory instead of Kenta. Pursued by soldiers, they flee into the forbidden Dark Forest, a place from which no one has ever returned. Inside, Jovi's magic manifests in a blinding explosion of light that destroys the entire forest, a magical barrier that had separated territories for millennia, revealing her extraordinary power as a light wielder, one of the rarest and most dangerous magical abilities. Upon reaching the Kenta capital, Jovi discovers that Acker is actually Prince Acker, heir to the throne of Kenta, a revelation that shatters her understanding of their relationship. The gleaming marble spires and crystal-domed buildings of the capital city stand in stark contrast to her humble origins in Alaha. Their arrival at the palace thrusts her into a world of court politics and hidden agendas, where every smile masks ulterior motives and every courtesy carries unspoken expectations. King Edmund, Acker's father, immediately draws Jovi's attention with his unnaturally youthful appearance despite being over 300 years old, far beyond a normal lifespan. His piercing golden eyes and ageless features hint at powerful magic sustaining his life, though the source remains a closely guarded secret. The king's prolonged reign has created a complex web of alliances and resentments among the noble houses, each vying for influence in a court where time seems to stand still. Jovi's reception in the city ranges from outright hostility to fearful avoidance. The citizens whisper about her glowing skin and spread increasingly wild tales about her alleged destruction of the Dark Forest. Some claim she commands armies of light beings, while others insist she's a harbinger of doom. Inside the palace walls, the nobility's reactions prove equally challenging. Some dismiss her as a common peasant who bewitched their prince, while others seek to curry favor, believing she might be useful in their political schemes. The situation grows more intricate with the presence of Princess Irina of Strau, Acker's betrothed since childhood. The princess presents a perfect political facade, beautiful, accomplished, and backed by her kingdom's formidable military might. The marriage contract between Kenta and Strau maintains a delicate peace between the two powers, making any disruption to the arrangement potentially catastrophic. Acker finds himself torn between his duties as crown prince and his deepening connection to Jovi while navigating the expectations of his father and the court. In the vast royal library, Jovi discovers ancient texts that reveal the true nature of her abilities. She learns she is a light wielder, an elemental capable of manipulating light itself, the rarest and most powerful of all magical gifts. The texts speak of Solera, the last known light wielder, who ruled over Earth and its elements centuries ago, bringing both prosperity and destruction. This knowledge weighs heavily on Jovi as she realizes the magnitude of her power and the responsibility it carries. The matching bond between Jovi and Acker develops in unprecedented ways, far beyond the typical connection described in historical accounts. They experience shared visions, can communicate telepathically across great distances, and even feel physical sensations through their bond. During moments of extreme emotion, their powers combine, Acker's earth magic amplifying Jovi's light abilities to extraordinary levels. Yet these remarkable developments only add to Jovi's growing anxiety about the nature of their connection. She grapples with uncertainty about whether their intense feelings are genuine or merely a product of their magical bond, even as political pressures mount and threats to their relationship multiply within the treacherous environment of the court. As Jovi and Acker's relationship deepens, culminating in physical intimacy that strengthens their bond, political pressures continue to mount. King Edmund insists that Acker either keep Jovi as a consort or send her back to Male, demanding he marry Irina for the sake of the alliance with Stroh. Despite this ultimatum, Acker publicly declares his love for Jovi at a royal dinner, humiliating Irina and defying his father's wishes. Just when it seems their love might triumph over political necessity, a shocking twist reveals the truth. Jovi has been playing a dangerous game of deception. In a flashback, we learn that her escape with Acker was part of a plan conceived with Kai. By allowing Acker to kidnap her, Jovi positioned herself to get close to the Kenta royal family and potentially assassinate the king, whose policies were slowly starving Alaha by restricting market access. At a royal celebration, Jovi betrays Acker by snapping a magic-suppressing collar around his neck, while her ally, Messer, revealed to be the shape-shifting bird Blue, who had accompanied them on their journey, attacks the Kenta soldiers. She offers Acker a deal, seize his father's crown to prevent war, and she'll leave his council untouched. When Acker refuses, Jovi attempts to kill the king, but is stopped by Acker invoking a life debt. She had asked him to spare Kai's life during their escape, and now he demands the same mercy for his father. In a compromise suggested by Acker's sister Bo, Jovi stabs the king in the shoulder where his magic resides, neutralizing his power without killing him. As Kenta soldiers flood the room, Jovi flees, pursued by Acker. Despite their blood oath preventing him from harming her, their final confrontation is emotionally devastating. Acker kisses her desperately before attempting to slap her, an action that causes him immediate pain due to their oath. Blood dripping from his nose, he orders her to leave before he kills them both in his rage and heartbreak. The story concludes with an electrifying preview of the sequel, depicting Jovi, now fully embracing her true identity as both warrior and light wielder, fighting alongside her newfound allies against a contingent of ruthless Strahd warriors. Despite wearing multiple Manji stones, ancient artifacts designed to suppress her light wielding abilities, she finds herself in a desperate situation that forces her to make a critical choice. When she finally removes the stones during an intense battle sequence, her dormant magic doesn't simply return, it erupts with unprecedented force. This surge of power triggers an unexpected consequence. Her consciousness suddenly hurtles through the mystical bond connecting her to Acker, a connection she had desperately tried to suppress for months. The experience is visceral and immediate, allowing her to experience his senses as if they were her own. She finds herself inhabiting his perspective as he sits quietly reading in his bedroom, his familiar scent of pine and leather surrounding her, the soft lamplight illuminating the pages of an ancient text about magical bonds. This moment powerfully validates Bo's earlier warning that magic doesn't like being denied, a statement that proves to be not just wisdom, but prophecy. The bond, it seems, has its own will and purpose, refusing to be constrained by human choices or political necessities. The vision takes an emotionally devastating turn when Jovi notices a woman's sleeping form in Acker's bed, her dark hair spread across his pillow. This revelation leaves multiple possibilities hanging in the air. Has Acker truly moved on, or has he succumbed to political pressure and entered the arranged marriage with Irina, the alliance that could stabilize his kingdom? This final scene masterfully encapsulates the central tensions that have driven the novel, the eternal conflict between duty and desire, between political necessity and personal freedom, between the rational decisions of the head and the undeniable pull of the heart. Despite Jovi's betrayal and their painful separation, the magical bond between her and Acker remains unbreakable, perhaps even strengthening in their time apart. Their connection, both magical and emotional, defies their conscious choices and political maneuvering, suggesting that their intertwined destinies cannot be so easily severed. The unresolved nature of their relationship raises compelling questions about the nature of magical bonds themselves. Are they truly destiny's work, or merely a reflection of deeper emotional connections? The scene leaves readers contemplating these questions while eagerly anticipating the next installment in this sweeping tale of forbidden love, political intrigue, and the raw power of magic that refuses to be denied. At its core, Metal Slinger is a story about identity and self-discovery. Jovi begins as Brynn, an orphaned guard in training with no knowledge of her true heritage or abilities. Her journey from Alaha to Kenta parallels her internal journey from ignorance to understanding, from powerlessness to embracing her extraordinary gifts. The physical distance she travels, across treacherous mountains and through hostile territories, mirrors the psychological terrain she must navigate to understand herself. Throughout the novel, Jovi struggles with questions of belonging that resonate deeply with universal human experiences. Is she Alaham or Kenton? Is she Brynn or Jovi? Is she defined by her past or her choices? These questions manifest in small, telling moments. Her instinctive use of Alahan gestures while speaking Kenton, Her unconscious reaching for the crystal pendant her adoptive mother gave her, even after learning of her true heritage. Her difficulty reconciling her trained suspicion of magic with her natural affinity for it. Her identity crisis deepens with each revelation about her past. The discovery that her parents aren't dead, but living as respected mages in Kenta, shatters her foundational understanding of herself. Learning that she wasn't born in Alaha, but was smuggled there as an infant during the Great Purge, forces her to question every memory and relationship she holds dear. Her emerging magical abilities, particularly her rare talent for metal manipulation, further complicate her self-image. These powers emerge at increasingly inconvenient moments, during guard duty, in diplomatic meetings, and most dramatically, during her first confrontation with Kenton raiders. The matching bond with Acker adds another layer to this identity question, introducing complex dynamics of fate versus free will. Their connection manifests in ways both subtle and profound, shared dreams, synchronized heartbeats, and an inexplicable ability to sense each other's emotions. How much of her attraction to him is genuine, and how much is influenced by magic? Can love be real if it's facilitated by supernatural forces? These questions mirror real-world concerns about authenticity in relationships and the foundations of genuine connection, particularly in an age where algorithms and social media often influence our romantic choices. Ultimately, Jovi's choice to betray Acker represents her attempt to reclaim agency over her own story. By choosing loyalty to Alaha, the only home she remembers, over her bond with Acker, she asserts her right to define herself through her actions rather than her magical destiny. This decision comes at great personal cost, manifesting in physical pain from the strained bond and emotional torment from betraying someone she loves. Yet the persistence of their connection suggests that some bonds transcend choice, leaving readers to ponder whether true identity is something we discover, something we create, or something that exists in the tension between the two. The novel suggests that perhaps identity isn't fixed, but fluid, shaped by both circumstance and choice, heritage and free will. Rachel Schneider's Metal Slinger masterfully explores how connections, both magical and emotional, shape our lives and choices. The novel presents various forms of bonds: the matching bond between Jovi and Acker, the manipulative influence Kai exerted over Bryn, the blood oath that binds Jovi and Acker even after betrayal, and the ties of loyalty to homeland and family that pull the characters in opposing directions. What makes these connections compelling is their complexity. None are purely beneficial or harmful. All contain elements of both genuine affection and potential manipulation. Kai's influence over Bryn was controlling, yet stemmed from real affection. Acker's bond with Jovi is magical in nature, yet manifests in genuine care and protection. Even Jovi's betrayal is complicated by her sincere feelings for Acker. The novel suggests that true connection requires vulnerability, opening oneself to both joy and pain. This is physically represented in the blood oath Jovi and Acker take, where they literally open their palms to bind themselves together. It's also evident in the mind-sharing aspect of their bond, where they can see each other's thoughts and feelings without filter or pretense. Perhaps most poignantly, the story explores how bonds persist even after betrayal. The magical connection between Jovi and Acker remains intact despite her actions, suggesting that some ties cannot be severed by choice alone. This bittersweet reality, that we remain connected to those who have hurt us and those we have hurt, resonates deeply with readers who have experienced the complicated aftermath of broken relationships. In a world increasingly concerned with authenticity and genuine connection, Metal Slinger offers a nuanced exploration of how we bond with others and the price we pay for those bonds, whether freely chosen or thrust upon us by circumstances beyond our control.